You're listening to the newchurches.com Q&A podcast. New Churches is an online hub for the mission of church multiplication. Here you'll find the resources and training you need to get started, as well as a community of church planting and multi-site experts to help you thrive. My name is Daniel Lim, and I'm here with Ed Stetzer.
So I think at the 300th episode, you should stop saying the same thing over.
Should we come up with a new thing?
And with the theme, dun, 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 dun. You know, we start with that Human League.
I'm really happy you're not in charge of music.
Oh, well, that could be awesome, man. I'm just telling you. And last time we should have a sponsor. I think White Horse Yukon Territory could be a sponsor of the podcast, because as much as we talked about them on a recent podcast.
Well, so, you know what was fun? When we interviewed Keith Getty, last month for all of our Plus members, now every month we have a monthly focus where we bring about interviews and resources and downloads and coaching for specific topics. So last month our entire month was on worship, the relationship between the pastor and the worship leader or the worship pastor. I was amazed when Keith Getty, basically your brother, right? Your brother from another mother, basically said, you know, that Ed Stetzer is the one who has been a paid worship leader, but Keith Getty hasn't.
Yeah.
Did he say something like that?
He was on staff with, what's his name, in Cleveland. He's been a paid worship leader.
Why did he say that? I mean, you agreed with them.
I don't remember. I have been a paid worship leader. That is true. I have been. And you know, this Sunday, before recording this, I actually led a little worship at Moody Church. Went a little crazy. It was kind of fun.
Really? Did you conduct?
I know, I broke out the guitar and I said, no, I did. I'm serious. I'll send you the video. And I broke out the guitar. So I'm preaching through the Lord's Prayer and I said, okay, so our Father in heaven, your name be holy. So I said, let's just take a moment and focus on the holiness of God. And so I walked over, picked up the guitar and I forget what it was. You are beautiful beyond description. So I laid kind of an older worship song, but led them through that. And my kids mocked me. My wife, well, she mocked me too, but led them through a little bit of worship. Now, again, I Tim Stafford is the worship guy there. And he said, what do you think? You think I can do that? And I said, I'm no worship leader. And he said, well, you know what? Everyone can cook. Not everyone's a chef. And I said, well, that'd be me. So I'm going to cook a little bit today. So it was kind of fun. So yeah, but yeah, anyway, Getty, he's a black, and you know, I'm Irish. Like we did the 22 and Me, whatever that stuff is. Yeah. So I'm like mostly Irish, but it's been I'm New Yorker. I mean, when your Irishness has been washed through New York City, it mainly leaves you as a grumpy, aggressive New Yorker, not an Irishman. So
yeah, like the fighting Irish, right? The fighting Irish.
Yeah, I guess so. That's probably, you got a problem with that. You got to let me come over and talk to you in Canada. So I don't know about you. Is Canada his own country? Do you guys have like a separate government or are you a territory? How does that actually work? That's the way New Yorkers say. Yes. Building bridges. You know, we have a disproportionate number of Canadian questions. And is that good? Because you sort these things. Do you think to yourself, my homeland, oh, Canada, it needs more voice? Why are there so many Canadian questions?
You know, you're right. When we look at Canadians being 10% of the American population, I think we do have more than 10%, but we actually have questions from all over the world too. So
yeah, I love when you say that Canadians are 10% of the American population and all the Americans, America, from America, are saying Canadians aren't Americans, but you mean North American population. And that's not even true, because then you got Mexico. So I don't know. Your demographics are not so good.
No, the U.S. is about 300 something million people, right? And yes, Canada's about 30 something million.
So you said 10%. Oh, you were comparing. I thought you were saying that Canadians are like 10% of North America, which
I got you. So
math is. I was told there'd be no math. I was told there'd be no math here. So anyway,
so that's enough of all that. Let's listen to the question
from Canada.
No, this one isn't.
This is from Red Deer, Alberta. So all right, good.
Hi, my name is Justin, and I'm a member of a small town traditional Southern Baptist church. We generally run 90 to 100 people in Sunday school. We are located in a town of roughly 2,000 people that is home to a small Baptist college. Our church is an older congregation that has a mixture of bivocational and part-time ministers who have all attended the college at some point and whom we consider our friends. My wife and I have gone through the college, have been members of our church close to 2 years, and are planting ourselves here to serve the church and reach the community. In episode 269, you suggested the need for there being some kind of rule about persons coming into churches who want to introduce practices or doctrine that are foreign to that church's culture. My question is this. Should a person ever go into a church with the hope of introducing practices that are foreign to that church's culture and affecting change? For example, wanting to end a Sunday night service in favor of small groups meeting in the community. Thank you.
That's fascinating. What a fascinating question. All right. I want to hear from you. Your brilliance on this.
Well, I mean, there's a lot going on here, right? So on the one hand, we've talked about in different episodes what it would look like to plant in the town that you're serving in. Now, he isn't on staff at that church, but there's 2,000 people in his town. And it looks like he's thinking about planting. Yet again, in the question, it sounds like he's moving into an established church. Yeah, precisely. So
are we even allowed to answer this question on the New Churches podcast? This is not the New Churches podcast. This is the church. Isn't there an Established Churches podcast?
There is by our friend
Rainer,
Micah.
Rainer does and Micah does. EST, EST. Wasn't that a thing in the 80s? You can't go to EST. Anyway.
Okay, what's fascinating though, and we've been, if you go on New Churches, we ask a question to everyone coming on. We have like a little bot that asks if you're a part of an established church, a multi-site church, or a church plant, and it's pretty even in the number of people. So what that leads me to believe is that there's a lot of established churches wanting to figure out how to multiply, how to grow, how to develop, and I'm grateful that New Churches is helping them in that. So I mean, there are other episodes where we've talked about the tensions of planting in a town where you're pastoring in. Obviously, he's not, yet it is a really small town. So let's actually go straight to his question. Let's kind of put that aside. Let's go straight into his question.
Yeah.
If you are wanting to go into a church or get, you know, about to take a role at a church, and one of the things in your mind is like, I'm going to go and I'm going to change this. I don't like this about this church, but I'm going to go on staff. I'm going to lead the church. And my first thing is going to be to change this, to get rid of the Sunday night service. What are your opinions on that? And I think we should kind of focus in on there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, but so he's referring to the old podcast though, where I said something, you know, don't bring a foreign theological system in the church. So let's get a little more honest about what I'm talking about there. Mm-hmm. So what I was talking about there was the rise of Calvinism in Southern Baptist life. And since he's, you know, since we're all, let's go all in on the conversation. You can decide if you want to run this podcast later. that there has been, now again, don't misunderstand. This is I don't identify as a Calvinist because I don't hold this whole system. There has been a theological shift. And what has happened in some cases is that people have, you know, gone off to school, come back, came from a church, maybe that's like the church he's at, went off to school, came back now kind of dismissive of some of that church that raised him and sent him off to school, and then goes to that church and tries to kind of import, you know, well, my professors at seminary said that I should, you know, change this, you know, and that this is has to be totally redone. So that's what, and to do so in a way that sort of hides some of that. And so I've seen, I mean, I deal with a lot of this in, you know, I remember early on, I was running a church planning program at a seminary, and a student wanted to go out, and I said, well, what do you want to plant a church? Well, I want to plant a church for reformed people. And I was like, wait, what? I mean, that's not, why don't you plant a church for lost people? Why don't you plant a church for the glory of God and the preaching of the gospel?
Yeah.
And so I said no, because, you know, I wasn't going to fund something to gather up reformed seminary students. So, but what's happened is as younger generation has become more reformed in Southern Baptist life, and this is not true everywhere, and influenced in many ways by some of the schools that have become more reformed as well, in some cases, you know, very, very much so. So sometimes they go back to traditional Southern Baptist churches, and they can't walk the journey, but they have to make these major shifts to the way that they have subsequently learned in seminary. And so that's what I was talking about. And here's the part where I just want you to be honest about it. I just want you to say, you know what, I'm reformed, and this isn't all part of being reformed, but I'm reformed, so I don't want to do evangelism this way anymore. I want to do it this way. I'm reformed, and this is not directly a part of it, but, you know, I want to move our way our membership is. Like, for example, I believe in regenerate church membership. And so, you know, I want to clean our membership roles, and we're going to eliminate anyone on the roles who hadn't been there in such time. We want to move to covenant membership. So So what I would say is don't come with a huge agenda to make a large shift. You can't be with the ones you love, honey. Love the one you're with. Mm. If you can't be at this, because maybe you went to college. This is one of the reasons I say when you go to seminary, don't go to a seminary church where it's filled with seminary students and led by seminary faculty, because that's really what you love. You want to be like that. Well, if that's where you want to be, then stay there. Don't go to a church that is a church of real people who love Jesus, who've been serving at this church for 50 years and working at a factory, and say, listen, everything you've been doing, we're going to change and is wrong. If it can't be the ones you love, love the one you're with. Love that church. Now, again, it doesn't mean you don't teach them the Bible. It doesn't mean that they may be doing some things that are more driven by tradition and scripture. But if you have a huge agenda for a major shift, you need to be transparent and tell people that. And I will tell you that that's not always the case. Having worked, before my jobs earlier ago, I work with what are called state conventions. And they would often say, these students are coming out of seminary, and they're not being honest, and they're splitting our churches. That's unhelpful. So that's what I was talking about. Now, back to his deal. Sunday night service is not the same thing. So, if you're coming in and you've got some changes you think need to be made, and they're not being hidden. Now, I don't know that you necessarily need to say. So here's what I think we want to do. We want to eliminate Sunday night service. We want to go to small groups. Well, you might need to lead people to that decision. And if so, if you want to lead them to that decision, then you need to love them there. But don't come in sort of having despised who they are, which is sometimes what I've seen in some of the attitude of sometimes a new seminary student. And I think it has to do sometimes with being a new graduate than even the fullness of the theological system. But don't come in and do that. But recognize, sure, there are definitely going to need to be some strategic changes.
Yeah, precisely. So even when, let's say, you are coming into a church and you are candidating and you are talking to the deacons, the hiring board, the elders, or whoever, the congregation, and you really sense that God is kind of prompting in your heart, hey, this needs to be changed, or let's say you have a fundamental difference in the way that you want kind of ministry to be played out and to be done and kind of church life to happen. And you're like, this is a really important matter for me. Like, let's say you're like, I really don't want to do a Sunday night service. I really want to do this. And that's just something that's on your heart. And one of the things that, if you can't do it, you wouldn't want to serve long-term there. Then I would say during candidating, be forthright. Talk about it. Ask them why it's not happening. Ask what would happen and actually say, this is what I want to do during the first year. And don't hide it, especially if it's something that you're very serious about. Now, having said that, if you're candidating and you're coming, I fully agree with you, Ed, you're not coming in to plant or to change the church into your image. You have to respect and understand what the church, where it's been, and understand and change does take a lot of time. But if you're really serious about this one issue, then be forthright and see how they respond, because you don't want to come in. I mean, the worst thing that you could do is come in with that secret agenda, try to change it, get kicked out, or want to leave because they don't want to change. And you just go on, after a year to another church. I mean, that's not healthy for you. It's not healthy for them. So I would
encourage you. And I got to tell you, I deal with a whole line of split churches. Because someone went to seminary, decided that they, that the church that they came from wasn't smart enough or good enough or whatever enough. And they came back with a real sense of triumphalism in a way that didn't love the people that God sent them to. And so, and I would tell you that this is something that is a recurring problem. So that's what I was referring to. So if I thought we need to get rid of Sunday night service, I would say, and I was candidating, I would say, I really think we need to look at strategically where we're investing our time and then walk through a process to look at the Sunday night service. And I'd say that that's something I think we should look at, but I wouldn't predetermine it anyway until you're pastoring and then walk through with people to see ultimately what God's leading the church to do with you as the new pastor. That's how I would do it.
Yeah. And this past fall at our leadership pipeline, at our pipeline conference here in Nashville, we had John Piper finish out the day because we were focusing on succession. And he basically shared that it took him 10 years to change the culture of Bethlehem Baptist Church so that people would elect deacons that met the biblical qualifications. 10 years for him to change the culture so that they would, it would not be a popularity vote.
Wow. Wow.
And so when you think about that, right, and you're like, man, he, you know, the influence that he has had, regardless of where you land on whether you agree with him theologically or not, if you look at the significance of what God has used him to do, and it took him 10 years to do that, I feel like when it comes to change, we really need to take the long-term view. And we've talked about John Cotter's Leading Change, and you have a great course on change and leadership, strategic leadership as well. So take advantage of these resources, work through them, because change is not something that happens overnight, and it's a core competence that all of us need to get better at.
That's a good word.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for listening in, and we hope you'll tune in next time.